This is episode 145 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Dion Morales, and today I'm joined by Marcel. A-wing blasters are better than force charges, Manzano.
Hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster by your side, kid.
Will, don't tractor, Hagwood.
Maybe I should have brought weapons that do damage.
And Ryan, liberated from the waitlist, Stanazuski.
I'm an Adepticon officially. Check your emails. People who are on the wait list, check it all. You never know.
Or don't, maybe, so that Will gets a spot.
Or don't. Yeah, whatever.
I'm on wait list.
Do what you want, man. Oh,
you got your ticket, Will?
I've just been pressing refresh ever since. Rad told me earlier. I don't know. I'm going to look right now. Nope. Not yet.
Set.
I'm on the wait list, though.
Maybe a nice present for tomorrow morning when you wake up, like an Adepticon Christmas.
Don't tease me, no.
All right, well, let's go ahead and hit our announcements and news, because I do have some announcements and news. So first thing is our Gold Squadron League Night, right? You guys have been enjoying these themed nights, and this theme for this upcoming Wednesday is going to be I Like Big Ships and I Cannot Lie. All right, so we're going to be featuring lists that use large and medium base ships. We want to try to focus on ones that we don't see too much. We're going to try to get the YT-2400 out there. We're going to try to get the Decimator out there, the Trandoshan Slaver. We're trying some different pilots out there and extended, and the hope is to play them against each other, not necessarily play them against metalists. So hoping to have some fun, keeping it casual, and we're working with the crew to figure out what we need. Okay. Also, this is a Patreon. Went the wrong direction. Patreon update. We have our announcements for what our upcoming cards are going to be and gifts for our patrons. So here they are. There's the art. But as for pilots, we have going from left to right from the top. So this is basically starting at that that veteran level. We have ZZ, Scorch, and Jake there. Also, if you get the Ink Series card, that's a tally. And of course, there's plastic versions of ZZ, Scorch, and Jake. And if you're at the general level, you're going to get that awesome Ahsoka versus the Trade Federation drones poster. And our ace squad leaders, commanders, and generals are also going to get the GSP logo sticker as well. Thank you so much to all of our patrons. But I do need, you notice there's an asterisk next to April. As we know, there's a lot of things happening in China with COVID-19 and all that. I have to put a star there, mostly because I already did get an email from my manufacturer that does the plastic cards specifically, that there will most likely be a delay. So it's been ordered. It's been paid for. When we're going to get it, I don't know. If it does take too long, I'll pivot to something else, but I really want to get you guys these cards because I think they look really, really good. That's that. Now, I have a little bit of I can't really call it an announcement. It's more of a tease. And here's the thing. William, Ryan, and Marcel don't know about this. I wanted to tease them as well. There is a chance. I'm currently in talks to do a thing. Okay? To do a thing. And we're slowly, I can't show it all. Okay, I can't show it all, but that's as far as I'm going. That's as far as I'm going, and that's it. All right. Now I know those of you who weren't watching the video didn't see what it was. If you're listening only, but I just work here, and those are the rules. Okay. Once I have an official announcement, I'll have one for you, but hopefully we can get some support is all I'm saying. All right. Hopefully I should know and have contracts signed and all things by the end of the week. All right. So let's jump in to our people are in the chat like I saw what that was. Hey, listen, that's the fun of watching live. Alrighty. So today's topic, we're covering a bunch of different topics that were brought up by listeners. We kind of got a backload of questions of the week, so I was like, you know what, there's a lot of really great questions coming up here in our chat, and I wanted to to address them, because there's a lot of really great questions. And I want to start with probably one that might be considered the most controversial or the most hot button issue, because I want to get it out the way, because I have been getting emails about it. The first question actually was asked by XPav, and he asked a topical question. What should the X-Wing community do about COVID-19? Now, I specifically want to talk about how it's going to affect Gold Squadron Podcast, because obviously you guys know I have a family, and basically my wife is my 50-50 partner in this whole venture. So the CDC, I'm going to just so you guys know how I am choosing to do this. The CDC has basically made a risk assessment by country map right now. And right now in the continental U.S., it's basically saying like, hey, there's risk, of course, but it's not nothing full blown. They don't have any, like when you click on the country specific on the U.S., there's nothing, no specific states that are being like, hey, you do not fly there. If the recommendations from the CDC change, that's when you know Gold Squadron would not be flying to those areas. But as of right now, listen, your Gold Squadron entertainment is set, planned for, and we're going to be in California in a couple weeks. It's going to be me and Will covering the Alameda System Open. At Adepticon, it's going to be me and Paul Olson going to be covering there, and we have a bunch of other things planned as well. So as of right now, I just wanted to let you guys know that like your Gold Squadron Entertainment is cool as long as we're good. As for the community, obviously there's some things that we should be doing that we already should have been doing, right? Like if you're super sick, like, try to, if you can avoid going to the event, that's great. If you go anyway, please, take precautionary measures, wash your hands, do all that. And maybe a new part of your X-Wing kit. There should be some hand sanitizer. Keep it simple. Keep it easy. I really don't want to go past that. I really don't want to go past that as opposed, because there's a lot of different opinions out there about whether or not, this is a big deal. And that's not my place to say. I just want to let you guys know. Our plans for that. Is that pretty fair, guys? I think that's a pretty just middle of the road. This is the plan.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Let's go ahead and start answering some of these questions, some of these more debating topics, okay? So I'm going to go ahead and pull this question first. If you guys are watching the notes right now, this is GSP debate question. Initiative bids, should they be shelter points where your opponent doesn't get them unless you take out the entire list, which is what it is currently, or should they be points spotted to your opponent where they get them at the start of the game? So you still get the initiative advantage, but you're giving up X number of points right away. Marcel, what is your opinion?
I think leave it as this, because when you're giving up the bid, or when you're taking a bid, let's say you're taking a 30-point bid, right? And the other person's taking a 200-point bid. The only advantage there is maybe potentially if you have ships that move at the same time, then you get to choose your initiative. However, you're 30 points, your squad is 30 points less, essentially, if the value is balanced, you're doing 30 points, let's say, less of value than your opponent. So the idea that the one that has 200 point flat starts with a 30 point score, and the one that has a 30 point bid is actually playing with a 30 point handicap. That means that a swarm at 200 points is already 30 points up, and the swarm and the ace player that's playing with 30 points has to basically engage to make up the difference. And that'll that's a complete disadvantage, because the whole point of the ace player that's putting the 30 point bid is to kind of engage it on his own terms, get a couple damage in, fly around, and it just completely, it just completely overcomplicates things. It also, I think it creates the environment for a different type of negative, I'm not going to say negative play experience, but a different type of negative strategic or tactical approach to the game, where you, if you have a 200 point bid, you just don't castle what you do and make the other person come and get the points back.
Okay. What do you think, Will?
I have the exact opposite opinion. Turns
all
out.
Right. This is what today's about. DSP, GSP debates. Let's go.
All right. So the first thing is, I don't think there's something wrong with a list if it doesn't, if you're only bringing, I don't even know what the calculations on that is, but we'll say 90%, like, because what, that's 180 points, right? So if I only have to bring 90% of a list, I shouldn't be able to outperform a list at like 100%. So there, I think at that point there's probably something wrong in I guess the list itself, if you can fly them like that. But essentially it's I think I agree that it's very beneficial, but I just don't see the downside of it outside of bringing upgrades. Because like I'm trying to think of David Keller was flying Echo and Vader, right? Mm-hmm. Two ship, he's got like a 30 point bid, right? But it's not like he can put more on those ships. He just right. chose not to bring the Academy, right? Which if he brought the Academy, he'd probably just die before he could get anything meaningful done, right? He could try to go for a block, and maybe if it misses the block, it just dies anyways, right? I think that it should be a more difficult decision to take an even deeper bid because it is such a powerful thing. Definitely not underestimating moving after ships in that ace style. But I think that it needs to have more of a penalty than a boost, because when you're holding on to so many of those points, it just simply makes your ships more expensive. And we've seen that kind of points fortressing in first edition with like infinite regen and just holding on to as many points as you can. Just have as many points at 75 minutes. Well, I guess that's the basic strategy, but even more so, like guaranteeing yourself points at the end of the game with that. And I think that like those aren't the ships on the board. So it should be given up. Making it a sacrifice, as if it was just bringing that kind of tie filler, right?
All right, all right. What do you think, Mr. Ryan?
I will be kind of the middle slash a little bit leaning towards Will's side on this one. So I do think that there is an inherent problem with a list if they could still compete at a high level against most of the field while still retaining a massive bid. It likely means those ships don't cost enough, whether it's two ship or three ship. Most of the time it ends up being two ship. But on top of that, so if we would say implement that ruling where you would lose those points immediately, I think I do kind of agree on Marcel's side that it does highly benefit some of the higher attack dice count, high quantity ship lists that could slow down or take advantage of stalemate, stalling. I mean, that is a lot of stuff enforceable by judges. But I think we would need to look at a new tiebreaker and not have final salvo at the same time, so that it, you could still potentially take those two, three ship lists with a decent bid, but not a crazy, I mean, the bidding we're seeing in second edition, even if you have the point count, because we used to be at 100 points in first edition, these are insane bids. Like, we never saw bids this crazy in first edition, I think, since it was the double phantoms when before they got their first like rules reference update way back then. So yeah, these bits are like legit crazy, and it does show that the ships are most likely more powerful than they should be. But yeah, if it's implemented, I think we need to not have Final Salvo as a tiebreaker. It would steer it more towards the high ship count, bringing high amount of dice. It would hurt those ace lists even more that want to take at least some bid. They don't want to be down on points automatically.
Wait, I'm throwing a solution to this. A little caveat, got my brain working away. What if you just whoever had the bid won the tiebreaker, and you had to give up the points though? So if you take that 30-point bid, you win on ties.
I mean, I do know that. So just getting into Legion, like, they have what's called blue player and red player. And the person who has, like, the bid in Legion with the points they didn't use get to choose which player they have. And if you choose blue player and they have, like, two or three tiebreakers before the final tiebreaker is just blue player just wins. So I don't know if that would work. I mean, it's kind of maybe working for a current game that FFG is making. But either way, like, I think baseline Final Salvo probably shouldn't exist for much longer. In my opinion, there should be other and better ways to figure out a tiebreaker.
Yeah, I still don't think like the whole, you know, I think you both touched on the main reason. I mean, the main reason we have bidding and bidding wars, especially like in 2.0 with at the Initiative 5 the way we do, is because the points aren't allocated the way that, you know, they're not costed correctly. And the things that, and the ships that want to have initiative and that need to have initiative, they're, you know, double repositioning, I don't consider that. It's mostly, you know, we're seeing the amount of Boba Fan bidding that we're seeing because Boba wants to move last because, I mean, let's say the truth, because of Slave One. If it was just the boost that was making the difference, then it wouldn't be that big of an issue. It's the boost with perfect information and being able to change your dial. So I don't think restructuring the entire way that they do, you know, the MOV and the points and how what you kill, how all that is allocated. I think the correct answer is doing some of the things that they did with Supernatural, where they put Supernatural to 24 points for Initiative 5, 32 points for Initiative 6. Slave 1 has absolutely no business being 1 point. I think everybody
100% would agree. It's way too good.
It's got to be 10, 12 points for Initiative 5. And if that were the case, people wouldn't, you know, then if they're trying to run the same Boba Fett, they would only be at like 90, 90 something points. I mean, at like 190, 190 something points. And then that bidding war wouldn't be in the 70s the way it is right now. So it's more than anything, it's getting rid of those things that they try to get rid of with, not getting rid of them, but just making them cost the amount that they should cost based on the initiative. And Slave One, it takes Slave One out of the equation. And right now, that Boba, I mean, right now the hyperspace bidding war wouldn't be in the 20s. It would be 94, 95, 96, because it wouldn't be as critical anymore.
Okay. For myself, I think you guys touched on some of the big issues, right? So Final Salvo as a tiebreaker is not great. We need another solution, whether it be something along the lines of it's a tie, make it 50-50, right? You make it 50-50, not necessarily making the list building part of it something that gives you an advantage in the tiebreaker, because already, you know, we have plenty of debates on, you know, already, you know, X number of ships gives you an advantage already because it takes more time. You know, there's that whole argument. And Marcel, I really, this is where I was going, where I think our conversation about what the bid, like the bid, is a symptom of the points not being correctly balanced, where while I know it would hurt people, I think the correct answer is things that are initiative 5, things that are initiative 6 need to be more expensive overall. Things that give you any type of dial manipulation after it's already been set needs to go up in value significantly. Specifically, the one is Slave One. And one of the things that's been cited quite a bit when it comes specifically to Slave One is people say, well, what about the theme? Like, why shouldn't you be able to easily fly the Slave One? Like, sure, yes, but this is a game. It is a game, and we got to make sure we keep the game balanced overall. This is one of those things where I think the game balance needs to trump the fluff of the game, right? Like, yes, the Slave One is going to be significantly more expensive, but that's also because it's significantly better. One of the things, I don't know if you guys remember, when the we also could see Errata. Do you remember the very first set of Slave One second edition cards that came out? They had a stress mechanic on it, the very first one that they printed.
There was a penalty for actually using the ability, to a penalty for changing your dial.
Right, and then all of a sudden, conversion kits came out, and that disappeared. So, you know, there was a penalty at one time. They recognized, like, oh, initially this was too good, and this sentence disappeared. Maybe we add that penalty back on at some point. I still think it's really good at one point. Maybe it should go up a little bit more because the blues are not super good on the slaver. But it's still, assuming not the slaver, the fire spray. But you know that's a whole other debate there. I think we made some good points though. I think in the end we don't have an answer. We don't know. There's issues that are symptoms of other issues, which maybe we'll get to those debates right now or in a bit. Okay. This is just a basic rules question. This is from The Wizard. He asks, we were in the middle of a store league championship, and this came up. We didn't know the answer. If a ship gets ionized in the system phase, does it do the ion movement or does it use its dial? I want to give the chat a second to see if they can get it right. Ooh. 3, 2, 1. Marcel, what's the answer?
It keeps the ion all the way up until the following turn. Can only focus this turn and only focus the following turn as well.
You're correct. So yeah, you get to move on the dial, but you're still in the state of being ionized. You use the dial.
Yeah, because the ion takes effect when, before you set the dial, you don't set a dial. So once the dial is set, that counts for that turn.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So yes, you get the dial. You're still ionized, so you still can only do a focus. But the following turn, you do the ion maneuver, which the ion maneuver is what clears the tokens off the table. So that's boom. I don't know who's highlighting stuff, but good job, team. Alrighty. Okay, now this is more of a philosophical question. This one comes from Murgo61 on our Discord. Again, remember, if you want to join our Discord, click the chat, the link in the description, or type !! Discord in the chat. This is where we do our lists of the week and our questions of the week, where all that's posted. And also, we just like to chat about X-Wing. So Murgo61 seems to be overall a little unhappy about a couple of things. This is about the philosophy of FFG overall. I'm going to go ahead and read it now. I will tell you this post was significantly longer. I tried to pull out the specific issues that they're having. So the question asks, why is FFG not transparent or responsive to its customer base? So there is definitely some, this is Dion insert here. There is some projection into the question for sure, but we're going to answer it as is. Next part of the question is, why does a gaming product require the community to pull a lot of the weight? Does this concern anyone? Example, judge group. So specifically what they were referencing in their long post was, in their opinion, the community is the reason why X-Wing continues to be successful versus the company doing things to place themselves in a successful place. If that makes sense. Will, we're gonna open the floor up to you first. What FFG's transparency? Do you care? Good, bad? Well, what are you thinking?
I would say it's has significantly improved since I first started playing the game. It used to be very difficult, but now there's live streams, Discord, the FFG forum thread that they got going for rules questions and whatnot. But I think that that might be the downfall right now, is that all the information is actually a little bit too spread out. But I would say overall, we're able to communicate with them as a player base much, much better than it used to be. Because I'm trying to think of, like, maybe world streams? When did they start the first, like, world stream? Or an official stream for X-Wing? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Before I started playing. Because I remember seeing, ID and Heaver in the final.
That wasn't live, though. That was recorded.
Okay. Yeah, that was before I started playing, so I don't know.
But yeah, it used to be almost non-existent. And it used to be like one rules reference or FAQ every 6 months. So it's significantly improved from what it used to be.
All right. What do you think, Ryan?
So I pretty much agree with Will on almost all fronts of this. Like, comparison to what we had before, we didn't have a Discord to chat or just get announcements from. We didn't have FFG live streams to where they take questions. Like, if you haven't had the chance to go and watch one of their live streams and answer, or like, I ask questions directly to them, like, we still haven't technically got a real answer for Count Dooku crew dealing with an opposing Count Dooku crew. I actually, like, posted that and did at FFG Live what happens when this happens to Dooku crew and all that stuff, which is that's a Pandora's box of like craziness if I figure that out. But like Max Brooks said, I will take a look at that. I don't know what he'll find, what he'll decide, but we might get a real answer. So in terms of transparency, I guess this is almost a question back to the person who gave us this question. I guess, what are they looking for that they don't feel is given to them enough by FFG? Do they want more updates about like as soon as FFG has things locked down for certain prizes or dates and times of organized events? Is it more on that side of things? Is it more on side of things of just product release dates, general time frames? I feel like they've given us, like, if you look at their upcoming schedule, I think they've give a general month when they expect it to come out. I mean, we're just in an unfortunate time right now where we have a real legit virus that's affecting a lot of the world, and production is at a halt in some places. So it's hard to, because the other issue is when they do say something, a lot of people take that as like for their word. And they understand that, so they have to be able to say with as much confidence as they can when they do say and announce things, that they can stand behind that as much as they can. And if, unfortunately, they can't live up to it, and they've announced and they've said they've apologized and they've given options or updates when they've unfortunately haven't hit stuff. Like, example, Legion just had a new release of stuff. They didn't get one of the tanks out for the Separatists, and they keep trying to like nail down dates. And unfortunately, we just got another update today. The March 20th, when the AAT tank's supposed to come out, got pushed back a little bit. We don't know when, but that's unfortunately they're just adapting and giving us the information that we normally wouldn't have had probably years ago, because now they've been at least a little more transparent nowadays that it's going to be, another shift, another small delay, which, it sucks. But they nice enough to let us know and update us and tell us as soon as they could, as far as we could tell. And they just have to deal with the current time right now is not helpful for any product company right now. So it's just this current situation. But I'd be curious if Murgo could get back to us next week or pose the question to you in our Discord if he's listening or on chat, just to know his perspective of what he feels is lacking, he or she.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the things I just want to jump in here, which some people are already pointing out in the chat, is one of the things that I know peeves some people is like, all right, so you give us a release date for something and then it doesn't, we don't, like, there's been several waves already where we haven't hit the release date for X, Y, and Z. And I know a lot of people want to know the reason, like, what's happening? Like, hey, I think part of it is the, like, I pre-order something, right? Like, I already put in however much money to pay for my next wave of stuff. And, you know, that money's gone. Like, it is spent. You're not getting it back. When do I get my stuff in return for what I've given? And I think that's probably what makes people upset sometime or have that more emotional reaction. Cause I'm guessing just like on the business side, there are definitely unexpected, things that happen. And I'm thinking just as a business, when something goes wrong, right, and they're not going to hit a deadline, unless it's significant or they think it's big enough to actually push it back. Like, they don't want to be like, all right, the one day they're like, hey, it's this date. Actually, it might be a week later. They have tended to put bigger spaces between their announcements because it's one of those where I'm thinking from their perspective, they're thinking, we don't have either the time or the resources to continuously update you on what's happening on this. They might look at it as like, hey, this is our business information. And I know that as like a big publicly traded company, Asmodee and all that stuff, or there's talk about like them being sold and all this stuff. Like, there are outside of X-Wing other manufacturing issues that might affect them. Maybe their competitors, like, they just don't want to have that information out there. This is all speculation, but I'm just trying to maybe come up with a reason for them to be cagey when they are about some of the information. What do you think, Marcel?
I half checked out on a lot of what you guys were saying, because I've got a view on this, and it's probably not going to change much, which is, as Modi FFG, they're a company. Yeah, they do the best they can with what they can, because the better they do, the more money they make. It has to do with personnel. It has to do with decisions from the top down. It has to do with distribution channels. There's a lot that goes into it, and especially, when there's acquisitions involved and stuff like that. So I don't really put too much stock in it. The people that are there are doing the best they can. And about the part that he was asking, why do they have to rely on the gaming community itself to kind of put together events like the XCC, the judges, and things like that? I would say, if I were running my own business and it was a gaming business, that's exactly what I would do anyway, because nobody has their finger on the pulse better than the community itself. Even in Magic the Gathering, there's a lot higher stakes involved, and there's cash tournaments and just higher number of people, and it's a whole league environment. It's still people within the community that are volunteering and doing that, and even if they get paid or whatever, I mean, it's still you know, it's the community running it. The worst thing, the worst experience you could possibly have is if FFG was trying to control all of the tournaments, control all of the judges, and like pay for people to go. I mean, they in some cases they pay, like they pay like room and board and stuff like that, or like a, you know, a small fee. But can you imagine how terrible a tournament would be if it was basically just a employees who were working on Legion and another employee who was working on something else, and then they came and they judged X-Wing and they don't know the rules and like they don't have a lot of experience with it. It just wouldn't be like we would be upset. I would much rather have D and Brent Wong and Chico and all these other people judging.
So I'm going to give you a little
from a passion.
Can I give you a little bit of counterpoint? Just a little bit. I think just to kind of, I think, clarify his question, because I, you know, I read the four paragraph version of this.
Okay, because that's what it said. It said, why do they rely on the game?
Right. So specifically, one of the things that they called out specifically was, for instance, there is that unofficial judge document that a lot of the big judges put together to come up on agreements for things that FFG has not released rulings for. So that would be an example of like FFG relying on the community and not having an answer for it. But I think that might also fall into the like you said, they have X number of people doing as much as they can with the time that they have. And from what we already know that FFG's already laid off a bunch of people recently. And I'm assuming that the people that would have to make this call, let's say all the rules questions we have, right, which... You know, there's many more of us than there are of them. You got Max Brooks and the other Brooks. I'm forgetting his
Frank.
Name. No, it's not Frank Brooks. Doesn't design X-Wing anymore.
Oh.
It's I see their face right now. It's another Brooks. Anyway, tendency of Brooks to go towards X-Wing. Anyway, it's basically two people that need... to make the calls, and obviously they're working on X-Wing, and who else knows what other work they have involved. So there's two people doing specifically that judge, you know, those rules questions that you might have, and they might only get assigned, you know, hey, today you have a few hours to answer judge questions, and that's when we get those posts up on the forums and stuff like that.
Yeah. I agree, but again, even with that, you know, it's like you're at a dam that's starting to break, and you're starting to plug a hole here, plug a hole there, and X-Wing, as well as some of the other games that they have, we can come up with, every time you answer a question, it'll breed three or four or five other questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a never ending thing. And you know, at some point you get, you know, again, it is a business, and at some point you get to, you know, what we call a, you know, point of diminishing returns. You put more effort to it, you're not getting anything back for it. So again, I don't think that's ever going to change. And I, you know, that's one of the things that I like, and I know you guys like about X-Wing, is that the community is so, proactive at putting together the rule sheets, putting together judge panels, putting together, you know, podcasts like this and Fly Better and other stuff. I mean, that's what makes X-Wing what it is. And would it be nice to have everything answered and clean cut and not have to, you know, debate about things? Yeah, it'd be great. But that's, it's just, you know, it's the nature of the beast. I don't think that's going to change.
All right. Well, that's what today's all about, is debates, opinions, and points of view. Now, I have two more that I want to touch on today, and they're specifically talking about tactical things in the game. All right. So first one comes from Justice and asks, when should I go about – oh, sorry. In terms of strategy, I think – this is Jared Star Wars. In terms of strategy, I think I do an okay job at setting up an initial engagement that I want. I know the pieces that I want on different parts of the board, that I want to keep on the board for the end game, but usually I'm unsure on how to get there after the first two terms of firing. Hi, June. How do you approach finding a mid-game strategy?
Looking at myself. Sorry, he's leaving. His mom's picking him up. Sorry, I kind of missed us. Well, what was somebody else answer, and I'll read the question while somebody else.
All right,
I can do
go
it.
Go for it.
So I think how you develop a mid-game strategy is obviously very dependent on the current game state and what you've already done in the first two engagements. But how you reset yourself to know what you should be doing is understanding, have I proceeded to enact or take the necessary steps to achieve my win condition? And what are things in this mid game can I do to still take another step towards the win condition? Whether it is, I mean, granted, everyone's win condition is kill all ships. But after things have occurred, maybe you're down a little bit, maybe you're up a little bit. That changes things. So I wouldn't say there's ever a dedicated mid game strategy. Unless you're one of the few lists that has a good ability to reset a kill box in a turn two or three, like a TIE-SF, like an RZ2 A-Wing with the rear arcs, like some fire sprays or Bulba, obviously, or ships that are good at turning around, Proud Tradition FOs with their K-turns still being mods, etc. But it's have you taken it? Does the first engagement represent the first couple steps in achieving your win condition? If so, how can you continue it? If not, what is your new win condition? I think a lot of people get caught up in trying to chase their original win condition. Maybe it's not there anymore. Like, because some games are so close that your initial, like, all right, I'm going to go after this ship or scare the ship away and go after this other ship, you know? And maybe your opponent did something different and that changes things now. How can you adapt to what's currently going on in the game and either adjust your win condition or maintain it is how I would say you develop a mid-game strategy.
All right, what do you think, Will?
This is kind of a tough one, actually. It's hard to... There's a lot of variables, I would say. I want to focus on, like, list building, maybe. And it's focusing on what your list is doing. Now, like, something like triple aces could, like, lose a ship and still have more or less the general strategy. If you have something like synergies between like multiple ships, you need to have a fallback plan in case one of those key pieces gets missed. And if you do have a key piece, then that mid game has to be to make sure you keep that ship alive. Especially if, like, even if that main ship isn't like maybe supported, but like obviously Boba Fett is a huge piece in most lists. Kylo, Luke, things like that. To where if you, Darth Vader, basically any of the super aces, if you lose that piece, you're going to lose the entire game. So knowing it's, I think Ryan was at, going for like, keeping that win condition in mind is absolutely viable, because you're going to have to adapt to essentially taking damage. Like, your ships are going to die, or they should at least, in theory. And it's kind of that general... Oh, man, I wish I could remember the phrasing now, but... but essentially, like, your plans won't get past the enemy. I wish I could remember that, but tip of the tongue. But basically, you're going to have multiple strategies. Your initial strategy won't come through. Your enemy will surprise you at some point in time. So I would focus on being like flexible and knowing if there's a key piece in your list to to make sure to protect it. And that might actually change your beginning strategies then a lot more of how you start to approach different lists.
Agreed. And I think something can't, like, you can't overvalue experience too, right? Because a lot of times the, well, we've talked about the mid-game adjustments, you have to fail some of those to realize, oh, I realize, you know, go, like Ryan was saying earlier, going after X ship while, you know, was a bad idea. And here's the thing, those mistakes, they continue to haunt you sometimes. In my game versus Caleb, my one loss in Swiss, I lost that game because I continued to chase ZZ when I really shouldn't have. I should have switched targets at that point because ZZ had a very obvious exit trajectory and I never caught him again. Right? So those things definitely do happen. I think it's definitely dependent on the list. Marcel, anything else you wanted to add for Jared Star Wars, his question?
Thanks for highlighting it. You know, I actually really don't put the, I don't even have a beginning of game strategy. I think it depends on your play style and you know, like you being not you, Dion yourself, but like you, the collective you know, or you will know what, you know, where you fall in kind of play style based on the more practice you get. So yes, the more practice you do, you practice your opening engagements. And then, you know, as Mike Tyson used to say, and I've said it here before, is once you get punched in the face, you know, the plan goes out the window. And, you know, the more you practice, you're going to run into different scenarios and you're going to run into different scenarios specifically with that list. And you're going to see what it can and can't do and just get the reps in. Most of the time, you know, that's where I feel I do, like if I try to set up an initial engagement in a specific way and, you know, like, well, the rule of 11 does this, or if I measure this out, or if I put my rocks in a specific way, I find myself that I'm pushing towards that versus just reacting to the board state. So I rather just have a clear understanding of what my list can do. Have a clear understanding of what my opponent's list can do, and just you know, from round one until the second to the last round, that's mid game. The only difference I ever put is in the final round, because in the final round, okay, let's count points. Doesn't matter if I'm going to put myself in a bad situation that I can't turn around later on. But everywhere from turn one up until the second to the last turn, it's mid game, and the strategy for me is react to, you know, to what's in front of me based on what I know my list can do versus what I know the other list can do. So and actually, this last week with the A-wings, that was in. I flew A-Wings at the last store championship, and that was even more so because they're so reactive to how everything is. And I think not a single time did I ever even deploy the same way. It's just like throw whatever and just react. But again, there's some people that like to be calculated, like to measure everything out, like to know, like, this is you know, this is my first target and that's what I'm going to go after. And this is my win condition if that doesn't pan out. And I can't speak to that. I think William is really good at that, Ryan as well. I'd say just practice enough to figure out, you know, where you fall under and practice is the only way to know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, the next question from Justice is specifically about practicing X-Wing, and how do you know when it's time to restart? So this is assuming that you're playing you're practicing first engagements. excuse me. So let's say you guys are practicing first engagements. I know that, you know, just because of the model and how, in our time, usually at Gold Squadron during league night, we don't do this. But let's say you're just practicing first engagements. At what point do you either restart the game or change the way you're going about practicing? I'll go ahead and start off with this one just to give a couple of suggestions from things that I've seen and things that I've practiced myself. So there's been times where if we're just trying to practice a certain matchup, that if dice variants do crazy things, you just say, you know what, let's just redo that roll or just take the average damage and continue. That way, you know, like, oh, that ship on average shouldn't have died there. You know, and we're trying to practice, you know, losing that ship, that creates an outlier situation, which might happen. But if you're trying to practice what might happen more often, you just go ahead and go with the average. So I know people that when those crazy things happen, they just reset the game. I've also seen people, you know, once they've set their dials and if they're in a practice game, say, all right, you know, I wasn't sure what to do with this. Let's look at this maneuver and says, oh, turns out that was a bad maneuver. And people say, well, let's just change it. Let's try another direction because this was the objectively correct choice with what my approach was. And, you know, there's definitely different ways to go about it. But I think being flexible and having the same understanding with your practice partner, if you are actually trying to practice specific engagements or working with a certain ship, I think where some of the confusion can happen between people who are practicing is the different expectations. Is practice for you just playing games? It might be. I would say for at Gold Squadron League Night, like that's our quote unquote practice, mostly because I only have one day to play at all. If I had another day, that's when I would set aside time to do those type of separate things. Now, when I'm by myself here, I can do that on Vassal, for instance, and practice different engagements and stuff like that, and I do. But I think it just comes down to agreement between partners what you're going to do. You guys have any other ideas in that? Will, Ryan, Marcel?
I think the one thing you alluded to and mentioned was you need to make sure with you and your practice partner that you both know what each other are trying, like what your goals are. Like, what am I trying to accomplish by doing this practice session? If it's, what is the best first engagement I can create? Well, go up to the first engagement, see how it looks. Is it favorable for you or for your opponent? And then reset it back. One turn, two turn, you know, whatever is necessary. Maybe it's just a turn where like, hey, that guy should just do that move. Just go back and do that. If your goal is to say what setup provides me the most, or what two or three setups are viable for me to bring with this list against X matchups I'm expecting, well, then you practice the setup, and likely not just like setting ships up on the board. We gotta go, I believe, up to the first engagement because you want to see where that setup took you. Like, what are some pitfalls that you saw of, oh, because I was turned 90 degrees along my board edge, I couldn't be as reactive to this thing that just rushed me on my flank, and I couldn't turn in as easily because I went too fast from the setup. If I slow down a bit, maybe I could be a little more reactive. Or if I did a bank instead of a straight, like, I can then turn instead of have to turn and boost, so to say, or are you keeping your actions open? It's just making sure that you know what your goal is when going into practice. Because if you just go in blindly and just say like, all right, let's just practice your list versus my list, let's just go until we think the game is quote unquote over. If that's your actual goal, then sure. Like, you understand that, like, I'm just going to play this. And until I believe, like, it'd be an uphill battle for someone to win either side. When both opponents agree, they just, all right, let's reset it. And then if you're going to do that, then I think you have to take the time afterward and really discuss with your opponent what went right or wrong on each person's side, and then figure out what you're going to do. So if there's no set goal, make sure you have a lot of good analysis and constructive criticism at the end of it. if you're going to set goals, make sure you stick to them and revert back when you feel that goal is met or hasn't been met and you need to take it back so you can get to that.
All right. And last year, I'm going to go ahead. There was a great question in the chat that I'm going to call the last question.
I just wanted to say something before you jump.
Sorry, Marcel. Go for it.
No problems. Just for practice, because I am lucky that I do get a lot of practice. And I actually, again, it goes back to your play style and what you're practicing for. I think that was a really good point that Ryan made. But if something goes really wrong, like you said, the Fenrod gets one-shotted, I just play it out, because you said in a tournament you would play it out. And what you find out most often than not is when you think that everything is lost and done, it's really not. There's been so many situations where it feels like I have the game in the bag and it just flips. Or the other way around. It feels like, wait, I had these first two engagements that were atrocious and this game's over. But yet at the end of it, like at the last turn, you get what you need to get and you win. And I think that's, if you practice to just give up after, or just reset, not give up, to reset after things go wrong, then you're probably not going to be in the best position to be able to come back from adversity in the actual tournament when things go wrong, because things will go wrong. So that's what I would say. Like, yeah, it's fine sometimes if you're practicing specifically like the opening engagement and you don't get what you want to get, just reset and do it again. But at some point you want to, a couple weeks ago I said, sometimes I give the initiative away even if I would win it, because I want to put myself at a disadvantage, or I put the asteroids in a way that put me at a disadvantage. Same thing. If dice go wrong and I'm at a disadvantage, that's just as valuable as practicing, best case scenario, because in a long tournament, especially when you get to the system opens and you got to win 9-10 games in order to pull it off, things are going to go wrong. And you're gonna have to, claw your way back from a deep hole in order to win. So I would just say that just it's fine to reset, but if things go really wrong and your Fenrao gets one-shotted from a range 3 through a gas cloud while you had a focus because of some weird crit chain, play it out, and just see what you can do with the ships that you have left over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So a lot of different options there for you, Justice. So hopefully you enjoyed that answer. And lastly here, I want to answer a question here in the chat from Gnomish in Can. It says, Dion, you don't seem to get to play too often, i.e. practice, but you've witnessed more games than anyone else and place decently when you do compete. Are you a special case, or does watching vids substitute for practice? I think that it's dependent on a couple of things. So it depends on how you are watching the game. Because some of us watch X-Wing just for the entertainment in the like emotional roller coaster that happens, right? Like, I am here because the games can be exciting, right? You have, and that usually leans towards really what you're watching are dice, which is fine. Like, you're watching the positioning and things like that. But when I am trying to intake a game, I am specifically focused on the maneuver choices, the maneuver options that the person has, and how those different options might affect the outcome of the game. Of course, the dice are part of it, but for myself, I think that part of the things that I try to set up myself for success, if you didn't watch the video, by the way, that I posted on YouTube, I thought it was a really good one. I talked about, setting yourself up for success, and I actually let you follow me around from the day before the tournament to the following day after the tournament, just kind of talking about it in about an 18-minute video. You get to watch 5 games and a bunch of other stuff in there. So I don't know. Am I a special case? I don't know. What do you guys think? I don't. Maybe.
I mean, you do have technically the most watch time out of anybody. I mean, you're live. You're right there. You got the energy from just being at the event and everything. That's a very very few thing that very very can't think of the words right now. You are a one and only for this right now, which is very obviously the only one doing it means you are the only one who's intaked all that stuff and knowledge and information. I know just from me watching one or two games, they like, I want to search a list. I'm going to see how people run this. And what I learned from like how they adapt and set up and move and stuff, people have so many different ways of flying the exact same list. There's an entire thread on the FFG forums for 5 Resistance A-Wings. And there are, I've seen so many different diagrams on how people have set up their A-Wings and eventually closed the net around people.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man, I feel bad for them.
Why?
Because, you know, I it was like I haven't played 5 A-Wings a lot, just a couple, twice at the Outrider twice last week and then the Store Champ last. And the most fun thing about them was that I was saying it's like playing Hot Wheels, you know, like you get the Hot Wheels racetrack and it's just like going really fast. Mm-hmm. And it feels like it's like a certain kind of liberty, a certain kind of freedom. I guess it would be the same type of freedom if you flew like 5 interceptors, where you can just be anywhere and shoot anywhere and just do anything, and you can like position here, position there, shoot there, shoot there, and just the idea of taking these ships that are just so free roaming and so fast and so maneuverable, and locking them down to a flight path, like a predetermined flight path. Might be effective. I mean, it might win games, but it just feels like, you know, like caging a lion, you know, it's just like, no, these don't want to go fast. Sure.
So
go free, just go everywhere.
It's not that these diagrams are like, so I created a few myself, and it's not, they were set in stone. They were just literally a few examples of, hey, this is kind of something I would do if I was facing a swarm list that's in a block, and how I could spread out, go much wider, close the net, and just like coming on a certain area that I knew they were going to go to. Against an ace list, I'm going to show you how to be cautious, but still cast the same net in a location and close with a little bit of a wider kill box. But you can interpret that, because like you said, the A-Wings, many different ways and varieties. And it just depends on how, what you prioritize and where certain ships and pilots should generally be on the board. But knowing how to take advantage of the obstacles, what a pivot rock is, how you can move around the board and still be not as committal because you have that back arc. Just plenty. I mean, yeah, like you said, the A-Wings have so much freedom to do what they need to do that there's only just examples of what they can do, which means if you were to go online to GSP on YouTube, you can watch and see all those iterations of what people have done and learn from that.
Absolutely. And one last thing I want to bring up here. Somebody in the chat had mentioned that one of the issues they have with practicing is that they have to end up playing. They only basically have 2 other people to play against. And when you have a very small group of people that you play with, a lot of times you're no longer playing like, I don't know how to explain it. I'll go more to the other side. You're playing mind games with the person, rather than playing just the game in general. I don't know if that makes sense, but you're more reacting. Like, look, I know that X person does this, so I'm going to try to counter them this. So you're doing a Princess Bride with your friends, right? You're just kind of getting in each other's head rather than doing what you would maybe necessarily do in a tournament. As for myself, I think to go back to like watching as much game tape, one of the things that I think is good about watching the game tape, if you're looking at it from a strategic standpoint, is even if it's, you know, let's go back to the A-Wings. Even if it's 10 different people playing 5 A-Wings, all 10 of those people set up different, make different choices, whether it be good or bad. And, you know, it just, it's a different way to constantly look at games. And I don't know if maybe it's done something with my brain, but I will tell you guys, like playing last weekend, I got a little itch. Got a little itch. I was like, ooh. That was nice.
I think you got the itch as soon as you started beating everyone on League Night. I think that's when it started.
Yeah, maybe. Well, because I started playing like real lists and stuff. And
I was going to say, from the video you posted, your experience, you could tell as the rounds were progressing and the cut was in sight, it was more excitement in your voice. You're like, I'm ready to take this down. It's mine.
Oh, man. Oh, 1 point. I was so heartbroken. That's all right. It's cool. We're fine. We're moving on. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed those different topics. There was definitely still some on our list, but I want to get moving because we got to get to everybody's favorite segment of the podcast. I think it has been determined that it is the favorite, and that is List of the Week. All right, so we got 4 lists here. I forgot to mark mine. That one's mine. All right, so we have 4 lists. We have a First Order, we have a Separatist, we have Rebels, and we have Scum. And it's all right.
I forgot to mark mine, and you put your name over the one that I changed. So
got him. That's mine.
Got him.
All right, so I'll make you third or fourth. So we're gonna go ahead. We'll start with Will. Will right here. He's got a rebel list that comes from Wiredin. Let me make sure I pull up the right one on our side. Here we go. Boom. And the prompt here says, "So I've been trying out different wingmen for my dark side Leia, and not finding anything I enjoy. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope." The list is Leia Organa in the YT-1300 with Hate, Ezra Gunner, Magva Yaro crew, Maul crew, which is how you end up getting the Hate, and the Millennium Falcon title. Then paired with Jan Ors in the Hawk 290 with Juke, Jin Erso, excuse me, shield upgrade, and the Moldy Crow for a total of 199 points. Will, what you doing?
Well, I don't like the Jan.
Am I just clicking delete? Is that what I'm doing? Just like right off the bat?
If I was going in a Hawk, I might actually go Kyle instead. Because I think that's a fun synergy between the two. Kyle stops to take a focus, right? Or he does a red maneuver. Leia uses the force to give him a focus, so then Kyle slings it back to her. That's kind of fun. Leia's in a Falcon. She shouldn't be slowing down to fly with a Hawk. So I'm going to just straight up delete it. Actually, I really like all these suggestions. It's a lot of them were the things, except for the Z95s, but there are things I looked at. Jake and Arvel fit with Intimidation on Arvel. Luke with either R2-D2, Proton Torpedo, really any upgrade they want on him. Really looks nice as a companion. Plus, I mean, Luke and Leia, come on, no. But I'm actually going to go in a different direction. And I'm going to go a very offensive direction.
Okay.
And prepared to be offended.
I'm ready.
I'm actually going to go with Hera Syndulla.
In the VCX?
In the VCX.
It fits. Oh, well, that fits. Okay.
Ooh, it fits with a couple little points there. And I'm a big fan of Rebels as a Bridger. Arguably, you know, the main character of Rebels. So we're gonna add in some more Rebels. So, gonna add in Hera, and we're gonna give her the two crew that I like running on her, Chopper and Zebarelius. Spectre, like, 2 and 3 or whatever. Who cares? But anyways, and then I'll depending on if you want to video now, I'm just going to throw a crack shot in, because I think it's very nasty with Zeb shooting range 1s, block somebody in the front. You can shoot a 5 dice attack with crack shot now. It's kind of like essentially a one-time use intimidation, which doesn't quite fit. But there is some interesting synergy with this, though, too. Now, Hera loves doing red maneuvers. She also is starved for actions. So Leia could actually start slinging her focus tokens. Plus, with Chopper, you can hurt yourself to take a different action, too. So you could actually start, you can steal 5K with Hera and get focus target lock, which is, you get hard one in focus target lock. That's going to be pretty nasty.
So I'm going to go ahead and read Chopper Crew just in case people who are listening don't know. So it says, Rebel only crew, it says, during the perform action step, you may perform one action even while stressed. After you perform an action while stressed, suffer one damage unless you expose one of your damage cards.
Yeah, the VCX has 10 damage cards too. They're 10 haul. So I can take a couple of damage cards and really not worry too much about it. So it actually gives you the opportunity to just flip one up and hope it's okay. But I like the synergy there. And really the big thing is here, Jan is not scary, right? Even if she's got Duke. Luke, well, maybe with a proton torpedo coming in, is scary, but can get gunned down real fast. Hera cannot get gunned down real fast. You go out there reinforcing, and I'm giving your opponent a tough decision. Do you shoot at this Millennium Falcon evading Leia or reinforced Ghost? And that might actually convince your opponent to just let Leia linger longer and longer into the battlefield until she can eventually get that kind of like in-game one-on-one engagement. And then it's you're getting magma rerolls, hate, all this, you're finally getting synergy, and that's kind of, I think, the problem is that Leia can't get gunned down. So we're going to bring in even more beef. And, after looking at all the pilots, you're really just looking for something to, play off that Leia ability of doing the different red maneuvers.
I might have to bring this for I like big ships. I can't not lie.
This would be a big ship's. This would fight some other big ships, but pretty good, actually.
Awesome. Okay, let's keep moving here. Ryan, you have a list that was submitted by Yuli Hugs and Kisses. It's XOX. I don't know. That's what I would put. That's what I would say. But it says here. Let's go ahead and just read the list. It says you have two. Oh, sorry. Let me just read them one at a time. Three Hyena Bombers. They're all different pilots. You have a Bactoid prototype, Initiative 1, with passive sensor, diamond boron missiles, and landing struts. You have the Techno Union Bomber with proton torpedoes and landing struts. You have DBS-32C with Kraken and landing struts. And three Trade Federation drones with Discord missiles and landing struts, ending at 200 points. The prompt here, it says, those hyenas are rarely seen on the field, so I wanted to give them a special place in this list.
All right, so I think initially, so I'm noticing it for this list to exist, it has to be an extended because of the diamond boron missiles, which is fine, understanding this is an extended squad. Hyenas are good. They, on average, went down a few points, so they're a little more space for some stuff now. I think having three Discord Missile Vultures is really good. Good across the meta, especially in hyperspace, even though you're running extended list, can still translate across. DBS-32C, while good with his ability, definitely synergizes with Kraken more than other tactical relays. You already have him going in, so you can spend it while still providing a calc as well. Keep one on him, keep one on one of the Hyena Bombers. to make an adjustment, I would probably consider. So I mean, I like the guts of the list. I like what's there. I'm not sure if three hyenas is the call. I maybe consider dropping the Bagdog prototype to create two vultures out of that, which can probably fit well. But say if you want to keep the three hyenas, I think this is a solid adjustment and could provide some additional combined firepower. So you can keep 32C and Kraken, keep the Techno Union bomber with proton torpedoes, but instead take the Bactoid prototype and drop it to a Techno Union bomber and then get rid of the Diamond Boron missiles and get rid of, let's see, we can get rid of all three landing struts for now. We can see if we can add any of them back in. So this should give us room to have a Techno Union to carry the Dark One probe droids and then also have the Techno Union bomber have plasma torpedoes. So now we have pure control over the order of shooting. We can use those plasmas first to knock off some shields, then use the proton to put in some real damage. DBS-32C can be used flexibly to where you can either shift one of those locks to another ship at the start of engagement, since ideally they would have had their locks prior to engagement. Or say a hyena needs to barrel roll to get a better shot, but already has the lock and has already calculated. You can coordinate the barrel. You can barrel first and then get a calculate later, or get those Discord missiles into position with that coordinated barrel roll. So we have 1 point left over. I'm not particular on which of these hyenas should have the landing struts. Maybe 32C. But I know when I've tried out 32C, I've liked to keep him mobile and not easily predictable to where he is, because he is the most expensive one. So it's kind of flavor to taste. Do you want a proton missile platform on a rock? Do you want a plasma missile platform on a rock? Kind of try it out and see which one works best for you. But that'd be my adjustment, and that becomes hyperspace legal.
I have to say that all again because I accidentally muted myself. So yeah, good changes, Ryan. two Techno Union bombers with plasma torpedo, one with plasma torpedo, one with Dark One droids, one with proton torpedoes, landing struts, DBS-32C with Kraken, and three Trade Federation drones with grappling struts. So just real quick, I put the landing struts on the proton guy just to balance out the points. They're both 39 points now. Just to, you know, you lose one, you lost the same amount of points either way.
Yep, there you go. And theoretically, your proton's hitting hard. If you want to put that in position where you need it to go. And on top of that, if you're on a rock, they don't get the obstruction now.
Cool. All right. So the next one is me. I get to play now. So this list is submitted by Azagol, and it says, let's remove player agency, shall we? And that submitted the following list. Cavil in the Y-Wing with Ion Cannon, Veteran Turret Gunner, and Proton Bombs. Ketsu Onyo in the Lancer class with Maul Crew and the Shadowcaster title. And Forlom with 000, Miss Hunter, and Jamming Beam. So we actually were discussing this one as a team right before the podcast, before we went live.
The we
that I guess didn't include Marcel because he was late. sorry, you made me lose my train of thought.
That's what I'm here for.
That's right. So basically looking at the pieces that Exegol was bringing, it was all about control. You know, he used the phrase take away agency. And I think one of the weaknesses that we saw right away, even though Ketsu is a really good platform in and of itself, there's a couple of issues with the tractor mechanic right now and paying so many points that, and now with that 90-degree turn that people can do, people have a lot of answers to that now. It's not nearly as powerful. And of course, versus medium and large base ships, a single tractor token doesn't have as much value. So we figured, you know what, let's go ahead and try to get a little bit more control into the list. So what we did first is we just took Ketsu out and then thought, what are some other pieces that in Scum that are really good at controlling and just taking away the options from your opponent? And immediately we thought about the Hawks. All right, so we're going to go ahead and pull up the two meanest ones. We got Torkoal Mux turning people to initiative zero during that engagement phase, and then also grabbing Palob, taking away some focus or evade tokens during the start of engagement as well. So we're taking away your initiative, we're taking away your offensive tokens, we're possibly giving you stress or jamming you with Forlom, and Cavil's got an ion cannon. Now, this is not quite where we want it, because we want to have a little bit more options. Torkoal, we really want to open up that arc in order to turn, have a lot of options and prevent people from, arc dodging away, give us a 180 arc. So we're going to go ahead and give Moldy Crow to Torkoal Mux. Of course, that leaves us 14 points above. And we're going to go ahead and get rid of Veteran Turret Gunner and the Proton Bomb on Cavil, mostly because we're bringing Cavil for the Ion Cannon, not necessarily for that two-dice gun, especially since we got rid of the Tractor Mechanic. Those two dice are not as reliable as they were. And now that is a 4-dice Ion Cannon turret, or 5-dice at range 1 because of his ability. And you end up with Cavil with just Ion Cannon turret, Forlom with 000, Miss Hunter, and Jamming Beam, Torkoal Mux with the title, and Palob naked. And like Will had pointed out in our pre-show, you're basically just boosting around and stealing people's tokens and shooting them in the face at range 1 when you can. All right, there's the plan. That's where we leave it there. All right, Marcel, you're up. Sure.
All right. So before we jump off, because I did do that one before I did the other one, because I forgot to put my name on it. But it's just something really cool. And I'm not going to switch it or anything much. I also took Cavil.
Much.
I
mean,
I
also took delete Ketsu all the ships.
Actually, I turned it into a 5. I took Ketsu out, put 2 Ion M3s and a TIE fighter. But one thing about the Cavil with the bomb, mm-hmm, and the Ion, that I, took that 10-point double shot, which, like you said, you don't put it in there because of that. I think it's a ton of fun to put Genius and Afterburners on there on a Cavil with Ion, because you Ion them, and then you do your whatever maneuver, and you can even boost. Then you can drop your proton bomb, and then boost out of there with Afterburners, and that's a ton of fun.
I like it.
Yeah, it's a way to kind of guarantee that critical goal. Because, I mean, if you're ioning somebody, they're usually not behind you. They're in front of you. So right, you ion them in front of you, then you move, drop it, and move again. But anyway, I am not speaking that. I am talking in...
Yeah, you got to get yourself votes. You're just getting me votes. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate your campaign for me.
Yes, that's how we do it. Now I'm the Kamala Harris to your Biden.
Don't just stop.
That's funny.
We're moving on. We're moving on. We're moving on. Anyway, Jesus Christ. Okay. So this this list comes from Flyers for 21.
Would love to see some comments, critiques on this list. Backstory: loved watching the Focho, but rolling blank red dice felt really bad, so I tried optimizing it best I could. Snapshot.
Let's not go through the synergies. Just like period there. Let's go ahead and read the list. So we got Midnight with Snapshot, Scorch naked, Longshot naked, Lieutenant Revis naked, and then 2 Epsilon Squadron cadets with advanced optics at at 198 points. And in their description, they were saying they were having some trouble with Boba Fett, right? Boba Fett Fenn. So, I mean, they did pretty well with it in a 32-player store championship.
Yeah,
Marcel?
And basically that they lost against the Duncan Swarm, which is two Technos with plasmas, three Discord missiles, and those were the only two losses. Lost to it in Swiss and lost to it in the cut. And wants to know how to get past that specific matchup and still keep some of the things. So one of the things about the Focho, I don't see this as much of a Focho because this is a 6-Ocho. I don't think that works. A faux six?
A hexo.
Whatever. It's only 6 ships versus 8.
6-Cho.
Yeah. And I think there's a couple ways to go about this. One of the things that I think might have helped them with, and I'm just guessing might have helped them with the Fenn Rao Boba matchup, is Midnight being able to lock those down at initiative 6. Mostly being able to lock down Boba because, you know, Fenn Rao's moving after Midnight. But the consistency is what he's lacking. So this is actually a pretty simple change to get the consistency up. This is not how I would leave it, but just keep tweaking what he has to turn it into something that's more consistent that can beat the Separatist ones. So I would be taking away the long shot. He mentioned long shot was a... And let's take away Revis as well.
Okay.
Take away snapshot, because initiative 6 snapshot is not really good. You actually want to have snapshot on something that's low initiative. So let's put advanced optics on Scorch.
Done.
Let's take that Epsilon, that first Epsilon, turn him into... who do we turn him into? I think we turn him into Revis. Yeah, Lieutenant Revis, which is the one that gives you a free target lock when somebody takes a red maneuver, and then just hit copy-paste on two of them. Why am I 1 point different than you? Let me see.
Midnight.
Oh, yeah, and I also had Fanatical on Midnight.
Cool.
So, if it's just against that matchup and in matchups in general, you're right. Long shot is a lot more points and is, the other advanced optics will you'll get a lot more mileage out of the other advanced optics than you will out of long shot, because long shot is every once in a while, and you have to hope he rolls well, where the advanced optics on the initiative ones will get you what you want. And Revis by herself, himself?
Themself.
By itself will, it gets a target lock and it gets its optics. It'll, if you don't get 2 hits on it, you didn't sacrifice enough chickens. So I think this is just an upgrade from what you had in order of consistency, but let's get this actually to the right, what's the word for 7? If it's hexa.
Well, so they like the Sinister 6 is what they were calling. They we got in the chat. I actually really like that. That's pretty sweet.
So you want to keep it the Sinister 6? I actually think this, if you want to really make it more competitive, you actually turn it into an 8. I mean, into 7 chips, and you want to keep the consistency. Basically, it's super simple.
What would you do? Easy. Just go for it. We got a minute.
Barely an inconvenience. You just get rid of Midnight, get rid of Scorch, get rid of Revis.
Are you going to disrespect Revis and take him out and put him back in? Is that what's about to happen?
No, I am not going
to
put him in. So just hit the copy times 4. And then just knock out one of the optics. And basically, you got 7 ships, 6 of them with optics. That gives you the consistency. 6 ships, you're probably going to lose the Boba one a little bit more often, because I do think that Midnight was the only reason he was able to beat those Boba matchups. But And against the rest of the field, I think this is just more consistent. And specifically talking about that Duncan Howard double plasma list, mm-hmm. that's at 200 points. Always, always, always with this particular list, I know you want to be tempted to take the initiative, move first, and block. I would actually always not take the initiative. Let them move first. Just play cagey. Barrel roll away from the, you know, that way you don't, they don't get the target locks on the first engagement. If you time it right, you barrel roll away from where the Discord missiles are going to fire off. And also, and when it's time to shoot, you get to choose whether you want to use your focus tokens for defense versus, you know, throwing them all on the optics. Cause it gets really tempting to just do optics, 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 but then it gives the opponent a pretty easy, choice on who to go after that turn.
All right. So those were our four list of the week options. Let us know in the chat which one did you like the most. One is a vote for Will and his hate Leia changes, adding the VCX. Two is a vote for Ryan and his tweaks to the Separatist squad, moving around some of those upgrades there, adding a plasma torpedo Techno Union bomber. Three is a vote for Dion for the adding the two Hawks instead of having the Lancer class pursuit craft in there. Just
and a vote for Marcel as his running mate.
And four is a vote for Marcel's Sinister Six or Seven Deadly Sins, whichever one you want. Now, while we're getting the votes here, we'll go ahead and move this to the middle. We do have, I'll just put it on top of my face. It's fine. So while we're doing that, we're going to go ahead and pull up one more set of lists, and we're going to do a GSP picks. All right. So we're not changing lists at all. We're simply picking between the lists that have been presented to us. And this comes from Pythesis Last, and it's two different solutions for double defenders being very predictable, collision detectors and a shuttle, or three academy pilots and a blocker. So here's option number one, and there's option number two. So I'll just go ahead and read them out. So option number one, you have two defenders with collision detector and then an Omicron group with Palpatine, or two Delta Squadron defenders without any upgrades and three Academy pilots. All right. So GSP picks. And you know what? I usually don't put myself first. I'm going to go ahead and decide my option first. Going between these two, I'm going to go ahead and go with the option with the Lambda shuttle. I think that is the right choice. You have the flexibility from the collision detector and some offensive or defensive consistency with the use of Palpatine. And honestly, there's so many things in the game that don't care about being blocked or can do something about it, or things like A-wings that are saying, you know what, I'm just not going to fly at you. That I think the Lambda shuttle is the right choice. Dion votes for the shuttle. Marcel, what about you?
Same. I think it's, you know, the Palpatine is Palpatine, and, I think it's pretty straightforward. It's just much better because I actually would talk about the collision detector to other tech, but
hey, don't touch it. Keep your hands off. God. Keep your hands off.
You know, two collision detectors is 12 points. That's the same amount of points to put a autopilot drone if they let me. I don't know why it's not, you know, like every faction should have an autopilot drone because everybody has autopilot. Like, you tell me Rebels don't have autopilot? Like, Imperials don't have autopilot? Come on now.
You're not wrong.
But I'm not wrong. So it should be the Palpatine. Two Deltas and an autopilot, but since we don't have autopilot, we're going to have to stick with collision detector.
Separatists have an autopilot.
Is it a drone?
Yeah.
What is it called?
It's called the Faith and Ultra Autopilot.
A hood of what? And a where? And a what? What?
it's the lowest generic Belbalab.
Oh.
Got him with words.
Boom. What about you, Ryan? What's your vote?
Hammer the agree on the Omicron group, Palpatine, and two Defenders. I actually like the collision detector. It means the Defenders can literally go anywhere they want. And they're already I-1, so they're probably moving first and don't get blocked. But they can also threaten more spaces now with the collision detector. And I've seen a double Defender and a Palp shuttle already do good before the points. I didn't realize collision detector fit. Beforehand, I saw someone fly it with HLCs instead of collision detector. And there's some definite cheeky stuff you can do with the action bar that those Defenders have with the coordinate from the Omicron group pilot. Coordinating a boost or a barrel roll and then doing your 4K opens up a lot of space.
And Will, what is your vote?
Oh man, I was going to vote for the academies. Now I think you guys convinced me. Man, I was going to be like, oh yeah, laugh at them when they won't chew your defender and they're missing attacks on academies. Ha ha ha. But I guess you guys are right. It does sound a little bit more versatile.
All right. So it looks like the Lambda Shuttle wins. But you know what, Will? You know what you do win? You won List of the Week. You got 60% of the vote there, followed by myself at 20%. Not quite, not great, but hey, it happens. Ryan got 15% of the vote, and Marcel with 5% of the vote. I mean, he didn't have much to work with there. I get it. You know, and then he made like two choices, basically cheated. You know, like whatever, it's fine. Whatever, not complaining. Did we lose Marcel?
Well, you did
at the literal perfect time you were just getting on him.
Is that what happened?
Nothing. This is fine. This is perfect. This is perfect. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us here on episode 145 of the Gold Squadron podcast. Remember, Wednesday, we have I Like Big Ships and I Cannot Lie. Okay? I Like Big Ships and I Cannot Lie. And also be on the lookout for an announcement for this thing. Okay?
I'm ringing the Nicki Minaj of ships.
All right. So, thank you guys so much. And for everybody here at Gold Squadron Podcast, Gold Squadron. Oh, sorry. You know what? I forgot to do this during announcements. Crap. I'll be at Crate Cup this weekend. Crate Cup this weekend. Gold Squadron streams Crate Cup. So, let's have a good time. Good night. Gold Squadron. Out.